listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And you're listening to State of the Art
on LA Talk Radio. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
Indeed, and our thanks also goes out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we have with us Leslie Ishii, director of the comedy drama, Pulitzer Prize-winning one, we should say, Crimes of the Heart, currently on stage at the prestigious East-West Players in downtown Los Angeles. Welcome, Leslie. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad
to
be here.
Indeed. Welcome, Leslie.
Very
and
excited.
We also have Paul Christopher Meehan, the hilarious young star of comedy, theater, and television. We'll be speaking to Chris later on the show today.
Chris, are you hilarious or young or both?
Both.
Really?
Both. 36 for a while now, guys. I am impressed with the studios. Very impressed.
Really?
Listen to the show religiously.
Do you?
Sometimes with the sound off. But guys, look at you guys. You guys getting all uppity here. This studio is high. Ooh,
I tell you.
Goodness
yeah.
gracious, St. Ignatius. Wait a second. Can we swear on the show?
Yes. You can.
Okay, I don't want to offend the Amish. They stop listening at sundown. We've got limited time.
Don't worry. You won't offend any of them. We have electric lights, so you're okay.
We're off and running now, aren't we?
Yes,
hey,
we
are.
Are
you
gonna
ask me?
What? Okay,
Young.
Do you want to offend the Amish?
No. I won't go there.
Trust me, folks, she's good looking.
Yes.
Never takes a day off from being
Leslie. Leslie is easily the youngest and most attractive one on our panel today.
That's right.
And including the hosts, we should say.
So, Paul.
Yes, Michael.
How was your week? What's going on?
My week was magical.
Yeah, magical.
My week was just magical. Actually, it was fairly uneventful. It was. I'm working on a little project around the house. Nothing big, but you said something to me earlier today. Michael and I always get together at this little place, Jinky's Cafe, right down the street, where I caffeinate myself in preparation for the show.
And I decaffeinate myself.
And you decaffeinate. And you said an observation
about facial tics.
Not
ticks, Paul, but and it just happened to me, actually, because I got locked out. No one, thanks, guys. I'm locked out of the studio. No one heard me, and I had a little delay in the restroom, which I used before I came on air here, and I found myself doing this. And what
it's
it is
it's part of Michael's warm-up,
about,
I think.
Yeah. Delay, yeah.
It's a persnickeriness.
Okay, what was it?
You know, when you look in the mirror every morning, every one of us, when you're getting ready or you're getting ready to go anywhere, and if you tell me you don't do this, I won't believe you. But we all look in the mirror and we do facial contortions. You know, we do
yes.
what we think we should be doing or how we think we're going to appear or catching this side or twisting our face over here
yep.
or mouth is open. These looks that they don't occur in real life, these looks, right? Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, only in the mirror.
No, no, they do. I think we all just morph ourselves into what we either want to look like or think we look like. I do it, and I always end up looking like a hybrid of David Copperfield and Don Knotts. I just always look like I'm mysterious, but I'm going up to Mount Pilot for picture show. That's always what I look like.
Oh. Well, if you're anything like me, Paul, because you've got such a great mane of hair, I'm sure that plays into it, right?
Yeah.
The hair.
Well, I am. If I'm persnickety about something, it's the hair, and let me tell you why. It's something I call the NOS. And the NOS with my hair is the nose offsetting swoosh. You see? That's the thing. Michael, I could never comb my hair like yours is. I could never comb it back because when you comb hair back and you have a proboscis endowment as I do, you basically become a cockatiel. You know, it's just like the hair goes back and then it's just like, you know, it's a weather vane, you know.
You got the hair, though. I love it. Baby.
I have, but the nose offsetting swoosh, I'm saying. You build the pomp up. The rule is if I walk into a wall, my hair has to hit the wall before my nose goes.
It's a pompadour,
and
yes.
I know that I've accomplished. See, I could never do that. See, I saw pictures of you, Chris, on the internet, and your hair just gets bigger as it gets
it's
longer.
It's just bigger, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People can't get satellite anything around me. You know, I have a neighbor. Very, very nice man. He's going bald, premature bald. He's very, you know, he's concerned about it, but he has a mole on his face with hair coming out of it. He does the mole comb over.
Oh, is it good?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So it does kind of come over the eye a little
See,
bit.
See, now that is, isn't that a cruel joke?
It's true. It's not a joke. I'm here to support people that have that.
God plays on men. It's like they lose their hair, and then all of a sudden they start growing hair on their back and all this. And it's just like, it's a cruel, like, follicle displacement.
It's, yeah.
You
it's,
have no idea how lucky you are you dodged all that, Leslie.
I did,
really.
Being Asian, too. Yeah. I have no hair.
Oh, really?
Except on my head or my eyebrows.
Oh, really?
I don't have hair. It's smooth.
Wow. Is that a common?
Yeah. Oh my God, smooth.
Is that a common Asian trait?
I think it is. I think I've seen, of course, Asian men with hair on their arms and stuff. But largely speaking, I think it's on the lighter side.
But that's true. Very few Asian men full beards, mustaches mm-hmm. you'll see, but very few full
right.
beards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. My brother and my father and I, we all have. We're all fairly hairy guys. And there was one Christmas where my brother had a mustache. I was clean shaven. My brother had a mustache and my father had a mustache and a beard. And we looked so similar that it was basically just the werewolf getting closer to midnight. Just like more and more and more. Like a fuzzy pumper barber shop. You remember those things?
Yeah.
The woolly willy things? Remember the woolly willy with the magnet shavings that you would do that?
Right.
You know, we have, amongst the four of us, I see that we have distinctly different hair, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Leslie has very beautiful straight hair. Mm-hmm. Chris has very curly hair, the Shirley Temple do.
A little bit like the Jackson 5 in a huddle.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Paul has the swoosh.
The nose, the NOS, the nose offsetting swoosh, yes.
And I have kind of wavy hair. I notice your father, who's in the studio today, has beautiful straight hair, too.
Leslie's father has joined us.
He's
visiting from out of town. Also a great head of hair, too.
But, you know, I think, speaking of haircuts, you know, Paul, when yours gets, and I love your hair because it's beautiful hair, but when it gets a little long, and you guys you take a look at it, but I don't know if you can see because of the large microphones that he's wearing, but in the back.
The Princess Leia's.
When he gets to a certain point with the hair, the flip starts to happen at the back, and he looks very Carol Brady.
Yes, you know, which is exactly what one wants to hear. After you spend what I spent on getting your haircut, you really want that Carol Brady, Marlowe Thomas
spends
comparison.
The big dollars on the haircut.
Thank you so much.
That's
$65, Paul. You look just like Florence Henderson.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, let's get off this topic.
Yes,
indeed. Now I'm embarrassed.
All right.
We're talking to Leslie first, yes?
We are.
Yes.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie, first of all, thank you for being here. And congratulations on a new production, Crimes of the Heart at East West Players, one of the most distinguished Asian American theaters in the country, really.
Yes, in the country. And we're the longest running theater of color in the country as well.
45 years, right?
It's your 45th anniversary season. Mm-hmm. And you've been affiliated, 17 years, is that correct?
That's
with the theater? But this is your first main stage production as a director, right?
That's right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, now, I'm curious about that, Leslie.
Teaching a long time for them.
Yes. I didn't mean to cut you off, but what I'm curious about, because I directed for my inaugural direction this year in the director's chair, and I picked a show that was, or I didn't pick it, but I presented a show to the theater company to choose one of the choices, and I had a great history with it. Why was this play chosen, and then you stepped in as director? Did you help choosing it? What was that journey like?
No, I didn't help choose it. They chose their season.
Okay.
And actually, it was a Friday in early July, I believe. I just got done doing a guest spot on Young and the Restless. I got in the car, and I got this message on my phone from Tim Dang, the artistic director, please call me as soon as you can.
Right.
And so I did. I'm, you know, my little earpiece and everything. And he says, I'd like to offer you to direct Crimes of the Heart. I thought it'd be something about teaching with the conservatory, my usual duties there.
Right.
And he said, by the way, I need to know by Monday. I said, well, of course I want to say yes. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning play. But I do want to also read the play again. It's been quite a while. And I did. And then I spent the whole weekend doing some research on Asian Americans in the South. And that's what really sold me. I thought I could really ground this play in our community with our history there. And that became just a brand new way to reinvent it, because it's been done many a time, you know. In fact, it's the third production in the Southland within the last maybe 6 months to a year.
Really?
So I thought, you know, it's unique with an all-Asian cast for sure, but I really want to see if we can reinvent it with our own twist and you know, do it justice.
And for those of us, or not those of us necessarily, but for those listening who've not had the pleasure of seeing this play, it's about three dysfunctional sisters. Tell us about the plot.
That's
a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Three dysfunctional sisters. And in my research of Beth Henley herself, the playwright, she wanted to write a play where there would be some inciting incident that brought everybody in the family and even their community together to deal with this incident. And that's Babe, the youngest sister, has taken matters into her own hands, and she has shot her husband, slap in the gut, as she says. And, you know, you learn throughout the play that the husband was not a nice guy. So she really was sort of, maybe, in my opinion, warranted in her own self-defense. And it's all about her sisters coming together. And they all have their own, you know, conflicts to deal with as well.
So one is, as it says in the press notes here, fresh from the loony bin, and
that's right. She came back from Hollywood to Hazelhurst, Mississippi,
right,
where she said she talks about how she went nuts. She had an emotional breakdown, and the oldest sister has been the one holding down the fort in Hazelhurst, and sort of nursing. Being the nursemaid to the grandfather, who's aging and has had a stroke,
and celebrates her birthday with a candle and a cookie.
Kind of a lonely little celebration, just she and the cookie. It's very sad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now,
but with a great amount of humor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very much so. I don't think people really realize what a funny play it is. Beth Henley, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author, attended the show last night, you said?
That's right, yesterday, matinee.
Okay, yeah. And now we were discussing this before, and she really enjoyed the production, as one would expect, knowing the work that the East West puts forth. But what was her take? Did she have any observations about the way you had made it your own and suited it for East West Players? Did she comment on that?
She did. She loved that we had our own twist, because we have a little bit of an Asian flavor throughout. We have an incredible scenic designer, Shigeru Yaji, who gave this kind of an Asian poetic flavor to the set design, yet gave us a tremendously great playing space, too. And, you know, it's usually a very realistic kitchen set, but he does it very minimalistically. But all the right things are there, all the touches are there, so that we could play it in a very real way as well.
Oh, okay.
And bring out the humor. So it's gorgeous to look at. The lighting designer, Lonnie Alcaraz, is top-notch. And, oh, he does the most gorgeous nuances to support the emotional life of the play. And Beth just loved all these elements that we took it to a different kind of poetic level, yet supported the essence of the play that she wrote, her intentions.
You know? Yeah, because you think about Crimes of the Heart. I haven't seen it in years, but I've seen it twice before, and it is one of those ones that you just think of like, you know, kitchen sink. Like, it's going to be a realistic kitchen. It's going to be a realistic set. It's very, you know, it's very film-like in that way. To open it up to something like that and
for East West Players, the scale, we go all the way, almost nearly to the ceiling, is gorgeous. It's a very different kind of set, theatrically in general, but especially for our theater and our space. The other thing I have to plug is not only did we get these top-notch designers with, you know, lighting and scenic department, but Peter Erskine, world-renowned jazz drummer, is our composer. I don't know if you're familiar with jazz, but the Yellow Jackets?
Yeah.
We've got guys from the Yellow Jackets who did him a favor. So they're like our soundtrack. You know,
that's so great.
It's amazing. Oh, I couldn't have been more blessed.
Oh, that's incredible.
You know, there's always something with East West Players where they're kind of mixing it up over there. You know, when Tim Dang was here with us, I told him the same thing with Pippin, which he directed and was so extraordinary and so different.
Yeah,
you know, and it was like I saw it on Broadway, you know, when it first came out. I think it was, you know, it was the very first Broadway show I had ever seen.
Oh, that's great.
But seeing it so contemporized as he had done.
Yeah, in this anime sort of world.
With the combination of a band and a DJ spinning at the same time. How cool was that?
Yeah. That was, I remember him talking about that. And it just, you know, it's one of those things. It's like any great artistic director or artistic design that's applied to theater. After it's applied, you're just sort of like, of course. That makes perfect sense. But it's the mind that sort of arrives at that and then presents it. That's the talent right there. You know, because it's always, you just say, oh, of course that would work beautifully. And then sometimes, you know, it doesn't, and you get Waterworld. You know, that's, you know, but...
Yeah, this is true. And I appreciate Beth loved all that innovation, and at the same time, she really felt we grasped the real play of a family. She complimented us. Well, actually, our assistant stage manager... Angela asked her, what is it that you feel is missing when you see productions? And she said, well, usually mostly there. Of course, they do a wonderful job, but the thing that they go into is sentimentality.
Right.
And that's, she says to me, that's not, there's no place for that.
Right.
And you guys did not. You really got into the physical bumping into each other. The sisters really get into it and they fight. And she was really pleased that I allowed the women to really get angry, which becomes really ridiculous and funny.
Right.
And she was very complimentary.
Well, I have to say that Asian families, and from my observation, Asian families are very similar to Italian families in that the love is so assumed, the love is so there, that you really have to be about 5 feet away before you realize that they're not yelling at one another. It's just the way that they interact. I see that all the time.
And what I'm, as I researched the play and got deeper and deeper into it, I saw all the connections with the Southern culture.
Yeah.
That behind closed doors, you may have all these ups and downs, and like I say, the emotional stories.
Right.
The start of the play, the first stage direction is, Hurricane Camille was just 5 years prior. And so what a great metaphor for all the emotional storms that go on with a family. But then outside the family, you'll be very gracious.
Yeah.
You would never know what's happening, you know, behind doors.
That veneer goes on.
It sounds like a Catholic family from which I'm.
I was just going to say, Michael, do you find that to be?
Oh, yeah. On this
side, Chris,
too.
You're Catholic, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We're all Catholic.
Yeah. Youngest of eight kids. Yeah. Youngest of eight.
No, I'm one of the few Italian Protestants.
No way.
Yes, I am.
You're not Catholic?
I'm not Catholic.
How'd that happen?
Really? My father converted for my mother. So we would go to all the functions at my father's side of the family, you know, weddings and whatever, and we never knew when to stand up or kneel down or anything. We were just sort of like the spasmodic strollies, you know, because everyone knew when to kneel and all this. And I'm doing a physical bit, people. You can't tell it because it's on the
brilliant.
Radio, so I'll move around.
Oh.
It's magical, isn't it?
It's magical.
Yeah. With the doves and the flowers and the silks. Yeah. It's really amazing. It's a shame we don't have a webcam. But it is. It's exactly that, Michael. It's the Catholic. And really the Jewish faith too. You know, you go to any Jewish meal and you're convinced that they just will never talk to one another again at the end of the meal. Just like, no, it's just Saturday.
It's funny. You know? Family is family.
Yeah.
Family is family.
That's right. You know? That's what's beautiful about this play too, is you see the universal.
Yes.
Where you just get into it with each other.
Well, and I know that the East West Players has reached out into the community with this play, right? With UCLA and the division
That's
of UCLA
right.
that is in tandem with the storyline. Can you elaborate on that a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
Absolutely. UCLA Asian American Studies Department, Lucy Burns has been our contact and advisor there, our consultant. Mm-hmm. And she was tremendous in helping me do a lot of the dramaturgical work. And we put together a volunteer dramaturgical team and actually compiled a lot of that info and have a beautiful display in our lobby about the history of Asian Americans in the South. She was a tremendous help. She's fantastic. And then we also have the Pacific Asian Center, you know, a family center services that is a partner. And they've been just so generous in helping us learn more about domestic violence, which gets addressed in the play. And... That was fantastic because that consultant came and spoke to us, and she was wonderful in letting us know the different traits and different ways people cope and behaviors that tend to come out of this kind of situation. But then she also gave us great license to take that knowledge and allow it to, you know, be played out to its logical extreme, which helps with the comedy for sure.
Oh, sure.
And it helps us to relate and have compassion too. So it's been a great ride.
I want partners. To. That's wonderful. I want to before we, because I always feel like we shortchange the commerce side of things, and I really want people to attend this. So, for ticket purchases or more information for this production, please call East West Players at 213-625-7000. That's 213-625-7000, or visit www.eastwestplayers.org. That's eastwestplayers.org, not .com. Make sure you make that distinction. Senior, student, and group discounts are available, and it's just a great organization, and I'm sure it's a great production, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, and it also plays through Sunday, December 5th, and with performances on Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m.
And Leslie, we want to talk to you again later on in the hour, because we want to we have sort of an initiation thing that we do with all of our guests, which we will address later. We'll just sort of keep your curiosity burning on that one. Yes,
great.
One thing, Paul, I wanted to interject with regard to the play is another thing that East West does, which is so wonderful, and it's kind of a traditional thing, I guess, that they do there, and that's offering a pay what you can night
yes.
performance, which is actually coming up on the 24th of November at 8 p.m. So once again, when people go to purchase their tickets, for those who are less fortunate and can't afford the full price, they can pay what they want to and come to see a fine evening of theater, right?
Absolutely. We welcome everyone.
And let's also address the fact that pay what you can means pay what you can. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you can pay a full ticket price just because it's that night, it doesn't mean you don't have
That's
to.
Right. That's
so,
right.
So, I mean, you know, I go to pay what you can nights. Last time I went, paid $6,000 for a ticket. Because I'm just that philanthropic.
Oh.
I am.
You're like Mother Teresa with a pompadour. You just keep giving.
Nose
giving
offsetting
giving.
Swoosh. Okay?
Yes.
Pompadour is dated. Nose offsetting swoosh is hip. It's current.
It was wordy. I didn't do my...
He neglected to tell you the play you saw was coming from Los Angeles to London. So it included the trip and the hotel. And
pay really what you can. If you have a nice vegetable garden and you can't pay, zucchinis are welcome. Is that it?
Did you say bikinis?
Bikinis and zucchinis.
Oh, and zucchinis.
It's a thinly veiled Italian joke is what he's saying. If I was talking about him, I would say potatoes. He says zucchini. That's
yes.
the way it works.
Yes.
Shall we do our...
time of the program, Paul, where we should do our live arts.
Yes, I will. Would you like me to kick it off, or are you going to kick
it? I'll kick it off with Harps and Angels. Randy Newman's witty, complex, bittersweet, and often satirical songbook is at the heart of a new musical work, which creates a compelling, honest, and humorous commentary on what it's like to be born, grow up, fall in love, and live and die in America. Some of the Newman songs featured include I Think It's Going to Rain Today, Sail Away, Marie, Louisiana 1927, Feels Like Home, You've Got a Friend in Me, and of course, I Love L.A. Four-time Tony Award winner Jerry Zaks directs Harps and Angels, now on stage through December 22nd at the Center Theater Group's Mark Taper Forum downtown Los Angeles.
And I will be watching that on Sunday, which I'm very, very excited about because I'm a huge Randy Newman fan, and I'll be reviewing it on a week from today.
Yes.
So looking forward to that. Obie Award-winning director Lou Bellamy will take the helm when L.A. Theater Works records A Raisin in the Sun for radio broadcast. The Pulitzer Prize-winning classic by Lorraine Hansberry will be presented November 17th through 21st only at the Skirball Cultural Center. The gripping tale of an African-American family's search for a way to grab its piece of the American dream, even in the face of prejudice and discrimination, A Raisin in the Sun was the first authentic voice of a black playwright to hit the Broadway stage. That's a favorite play of mine. Love Raisin in the Sun.
Indeed.
For more information about these shows, please visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com, and also performingartslive.com.
Indeed. And you know, Paul, I had the pleasure of seeing a wonderful piece of theater actually last week after we completed our Monday show and went to the Alex Theater in Glendale and saw the Musical Theater Guild's production of Hello Again, which is a Michael John Laquisa play. Are you familiar with his work?
I'm not.
It's a musical. It's brilliant. It was based on La Ronde, you know, the classic story. And Musical Theater Guild, are you familiar with Chris?
No.
At all? They're a group that's in town that obviously is dedicated to musical theater, but they put these plays together. There's a whole kind of foundation to what their method is. And it's a one night only here in our area. So Glendale Alex Theater is the host. And if they do a second night, it's usually out in Thousand Oaks at the Fred Cavalli not at the Fred Cavalier Theater itself, but in that complex, the Thousand Oaks Performing Arts, Civic Arts Plaza.
Is that where Cabrillo does some of their work, too?
Well, okay. Cabrillo does their work in the on main stage.
Oh, okay.
But the criteria here for is a 25-hour rehearsal. 25 hours.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. No.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
We're all breaking into a cold sweat over that.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. No, 25 hours, and they've been doing this for over 10 years.
Wow.
And they do it with an orchestra on the stage. Everybody who is off book is off book. If you're still on the book, you're still on the book.
Wow.
And it's brilliant to see the level, first of all, the level of performers coming in are you know, major talent from our community here, our Broadway-based community. And their performances do not suffer in the least from this type of
I have a feeling
approach.
They're especially electric.
Oh, yeah. Well, because think about it. Every performance must be like that understudy performance.
Right.
Because you haven't had enough time on the boards and you have that whole, like, nervous energy. How many productions have you seen there?
I've seen about three.
Okay.
So far.
And is it like that?
Every one of them is, it's very exciting to watch and see how it unfurls and people's approaches to, you know, the roles. And I think certain things probably happen in the production that are unexpected, you know, just because of the nature of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's, from an audience point of view, all of the works that they choose to do are shows like this, the seldom done shows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fantastic. So you wouldn't necessarily be that familiar with what, you know, how an actor may have gone up or not in a situation.
right.
But some standout performances with, I must say, Cynthia Ferrer and also Will Collier, Kim Huber, and Lo Taylor in this production, and a brilliant orchestra that was directed by Matthew Smidell. And I urge everyone to support this group, Musical Theater Guild of Los Angeles, and they can do so by going to their website, musicaltheaterguild.org. Check out their season. Make sure you see one of their works, because it's really quite an experience.
I'm going.
One more thing I wanted to ask you, Michael. I was anxious to hear how Maura Hanlon-Smith's performance went, because I helped her out with some promotional material.
You did, indeed.
I was just curious. I know her performance was Sunday at Vitello's.
Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's.
Are either of you familiar with Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's?
Yes,
oh.
I am.
It's a wonderful little
have
supper
you been?
Club.
I have, because that's your club?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, of course.
Yeah.
I hear jazz there often.
During the week.
That's right.
During the
and
week.
In fact, that's where I often go to hear Peter Erskine play.
But you're Sunday, right?
I'm Sunday. Yeah, we're Sunday there. So we established the club 4 years ago, and it bears my name for what I do, which is the best of Broadway performers in concert, and also those nightclub stars dedicated to the Great American Songbook.
Oh, great.
So Maura Hanlon-Smith, who Paul did do some great promotional materials for, is a singer in town here that has an amazing business in addition to what she does as a performer, but it's all entertainment-based, she and her husband, and she's just one of those women that came in and was the perfect, last night, the perfect hybrid of cabaret and a nightclub act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was because, you know, drawn from life experience, I mean, you could only be that good as she was last night. And directed by a wonderful director, Robert Mara, who's kind of an up-and-comer in Los Angeles right now. And it was the perfect blend, you know, musically of what she chose to sing, you know, which was things that we certainly are familiar with, Come Back to Me, Lerner and Lowe's Come Back to Me, and Hit Me with a Hot Note, and Coronet Man, Sending the Clowns, and some special material, certainly, and closing with I'll Be Seeing You, which everything I just said, everything was a reason. It wasn't just some sort of randomly placed.
Right. There was a through line.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And everything she did was done. I was so fascinated. I could not take my eyes off of this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And her voice, of course. I mean, that.
And she's not hard to look at.
Easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
But she got two very lengthy standing ovations during the performance, and it's only an hour performance.
Yeah, that says something right
and
there.
And it was just blow
and
the roof
off. Attendance was good?
Yeah, huge.
Oh,
huge. So, Maura, congratulations. It was a pleasure to have you, Robert Mara. Always a pleasure to have you in the club as well. And for those of you out there that like this type of entertainment, come see us at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's on Sundays.
It's great. It's like an old.
Paul's performed
old,
there.
I've seen a dozen or so shows now, and it's just it's like going back in time, but I say that in only the best way, in terms of like elegance and old school. And you know, you want to wear a jacket when you go. You want to just have that. It's just that feel. It just like it reminds me of old Vegas, like Rat Pack Vegas. But you know, without the hookers.
It doesn't have anything to do with my hair, does it?
And parking.
All right, let's move on. Our next guest is a stand-up comedian and actor from television and the theater stage. His latest onstage project, Ted's Theater Kitchen, an evening of scenes and hors d'oeuvres with 19 actors for 3 nights only at the Elephant Theater in Hollywood, beginning tomorrow, November 16th, and again on November 17th and 21st, the lovely, the talented Christopher Meehan is with us. Chris.
I'm doing
Where's
great.
Where's our applause? Where's what? Our applause?
Oh, I'm sorry. Applause. I'm sorry. Let me try that again.
Hold on.
The lovely, the talented
Everybody.
Christopher Meehan.
Wow, thank you.
Yay!
Wait, here's the best part. The audible cutoff is my favorite thing.
I was calming down. This portion of the Christopher Meehan Show is brought to you by Meximucil. Meximucil, the spicy laxative.
Ay, ay, ay!
Put a little pep in your pipes. You know, back to commerce, guys. You know, theater needs the dough. And, you know, throw a sponsor in there, I think, is healthy. Do you get money if I plug two things before we plug my career?
Go right ahead.
I'm having a garage sale next week. Just go to Craigslist. Christopher Meehan. Need it. I got a futon. I got some great items.
Okay.
Sure, people want to have a TV, and also a bake sale tomorrow. St. Monica's, the 8:30 mass, and then we have a 1:15 mass. Come for Jesus, come for some sugary snacks. It's all about community.
And actually, aren't some of the sugary snacks shaped like Jesus? Did you do that again this year?
You had to go there.
Yeah.
You had to go.
Because I tell you, that crucifix crisper is delicious.
Delightful. 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 God, there's a lot of material coming right now, but I think, I don't know if I don't know if Monsignor's listening. But anyway, it's tough. It's tough being Catholic, you know what I mean? When you're practicing Catholic, you know, I hope to get it right once so I don't have to practice anymore.
One day.
But, you know, St. Monica's Church, a great church out there in Santa Monica, you know. They're, the 5:30 Mass, a lot of young people, you know. My logo or my thing is, you know, come for the chick, stay for Jesus. Any way to get him in the door. You know what I mean? Why not look in the pond, you know, fish in the pond?
Well, that's sort of like the Southern family reunions where you go to meet women, you know.
Yes. So, theater.
How did we get here so fast, Chris?
I don't know.
You're supposed to be just promoting and talking about this magical thing that you're doing, and immediately we're talking about where...
we're right there. Oh, and the Amish. You know, I was writing notes while you guys were... I was being correct. I was shuffling papers. Paul thought I was recycling.
I know. I'm just sitting here. We're talking to Leslie. It's just like, why don't we just give you some cellophane to play with?
Oh, theater. Ted's Theater Kitchen.
Yes, tell us about
it. Tell us about that.
All right, so
the Elephant Theater, right?
Yeah, magical.
That's a good complex in Hollywood.
It's a great complex. So this guy, Ted Madison, just to kind of a place to work out, but he got together these 19 fantastic actors, and we're doing...
18 and you.
18 and me, right, yeah. Well, yeah, 18 and one hack. And I'm in three pieces, fabulously funny. And it's short. You get, you know, a little booze, a little food, you're in or out, you know, that's what I like. I mean, Paul, you and I were talking about how there's so much crummy shows in theater too out. You guys talk about this a lot, I'm sure.
We haven't actually touched on it. Michael and I talked about it off the air, but our goal with this show is to stamp out the showcase in our lifetime.
Kill it out.
Yeah. Hallelujah.
Kill it. Yeah.
But
you know,
when Chris was telling me about Ted's Theater Kitchen, he was pointing out how it is not that.
It's not that. No. Right. And, you know, everybody's working, so it's not, you know, and people are bringing their, everyone has an agent, and they're not doing it for that, but it's good stuff.
It's almost like a jam. It's almost like a jazz, like you would see jazz musicians go and just keep their chops going. And
it's a jam.
Yeah.
It's a jam. You know, you go to some of these things, and you just don't feel like you're in professional hands. People are talking upstage, or, you know, everybody here is kind of a sound thing. It's a fun night. It's a fun night. Yeah. We have a piece that I wrote. It's Wonder Woman's first relationship, and the first man she met off the Amazon Island is, of course, a man who runs a codependence men's group. So that's real manly. So she's a little confused, and she happens to be at the height of her womanhood cycle. So it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
And, you know, it's good. Yeah.
Because it's not a musical.
It's not a musical. Yeah. I'm tempted.
So now when you say, you know, when it's unprofessional, people are upstage, talking upstage or doing things like that. Is that difficult for someone like you who I know through experience is just so ritual about his process, and like you, because you never ad lib, you never wig things. You observe every comma in that script as though it's engraved in stone. Is it difficult for someone like you to have to, ad lib?
You know,
this is the worst on stage. This is a guy who will break you up on stage. We did a show recently called Playing Jordan Goldman.
That's right.
And Chris and I were on stage together. And what was the line? What was the line in the script? And then tell them what that line became by the end of the run.
So it's a thing where this guy wants sports or corporate sponsorship for his bar mitzvah. You know, it's a great premise. It was funny. And I'm the sales guy going around. I come in out of town and I have about a 7-line spiel where everyone has to be quiet, and there's one guy, Joe. Yeah. He didn't have a line.
Right.
And right before we went on stage, I asked him what type of car he drove. He goes, "Oh, I drive a PT Cruiser." I'm like, "Got it."
But even that wasn't in the original script.
It wasn't a thing. So I'm walking around saying, "We got this sponsor, we got that." And I stop and I turn to Joe and I go, "What type of car you got?" And he freezes on stage and goes, "PT Cruiser." I go, "Do you know that that is the second most driven car by lesbians?" And the writer was in the scene, and he's just, everyone's like, what is he doing? I'm like, and so you think I'd stop there, but I don't. No. I go, "You know the number one? The Outback Forester."
No, Subaru Outback Legacy. Yeah. But then it got more, and it got more, and by the end of the production, by the end of the run, what was two words in the script was easily 7 lines.
Yeah, yeah.
7-8 lines.
Yeah.
So that's why I ask you about in relationship to this, how you cope with this sort of is there
wiggle room? There's a little bit of wiggle room, you know. Oh man, you know, when I came to town, you just wing it and that.
How long ago was that, Chris?
That was 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
From San Francisco, right?
San Francisco. And, you know, I would wing it and it would work. I do a comedy act with two other brothers, the Meehan brothers.
And are they older, younger than you?
They're older. Yep. They're older. And been riding on the
youngest.
Oh, the youngest baby, yes.
Youngest of eight.
Yes. I was the accident, actually. Or more of the Catholic Rhythm Method fender bender. But, you know, I'm here. I was a 16-pound baby, which is incredible. Also known as a Samoan preemie. But anyway, I was here. But
you,
you know,
were 16 pounds?
There's an active mass somewhere.
I was just setting up the Samoan preemie. That's the
person. Were you a large baby, though?
I was about like 9.5.
2.9. 2 pounds, 9 ounces. That's how big
really?
I was.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was like...
What'd your crib look like?
I was like a baby possum. Yeah. I was a nose with feet.
Did they bring you home in like a little Tupperware thing or like a leftover?
I was...
A leftover
wait,
tin?
But you have to tell your listeners how tall you are.
I am 6'2". I'm 6'2".
Amazing.
Well, but I was 2 months premature. And my grandmother, too. She was like upset that I lived. She tells the story.
We knew you were dead. I saw you in that little incubator, and I saw your little chest go up, and I saw your little chest go down, and I said, "He's dead. That baby is dead." Like, I'm sorry I disappointed you by living, Grandma.
That was your grandma.
Throw off
speaking?
Your summer.
That was your grandma?
That's basically my mother, just deeper.
Oh, okay.
I just
that's
go deeper with
say.
The voice of my
like
grandma.
Yeah.
Anyway, back
to my show that I'm trying to plug. You know, let's talk about sports. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you something know? Interesting. Go ahead.
You know, by the way, though, you know, a little advice I like to give these new actors out here, Michael. You know, they come to town, they're ambitious, wonderful. But I want to say you can't change anybody. You can just fiddle with their medication. That's all I want to say. Kids, stay out there. You know, get in the trades. Make sure you have a job.
Do you know that person?
Wendy.
We have a
do you
caller.
Know that person?
Yeah, come on, Wendy.
We
give it a
caller.
Shot.
Oh, so should we chat with her?
Yes.
Do you know Wendy?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Pursue at your own risk.
We have a Wendy calling in, and I'm curious if I should take the call because
why
I don't know.
Why not?
Let's just give
let's
it a shot,
try.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Hello, you're on LA Talk Radio. Hello.
Hi,
how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we
I can hear you. Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
I'm blinking.
Well, you know, it's weird. I'm trying. I can hear you coming out of my.
Oh, well, if you're talking to us on the phone, turn your computer way down. If you're listening to us on that thing, turn the audio down.
I'm calling you through Skype. I'm actually a host, and I have a show tomorrow, but I'm doing it on my laptop.
Okay, well, actually, you know what, Wendy? I appreciate...
I'm trying to make that work.
Wendy, I appreciate that, but we're actually on the air right now doing the show, so you should probably call back another time.
I apologize.
No problem, no problem. We'll talk to you soon.
Are you seeing anybody? I just would like to have a relationship one of these days. What were we talking about?
Well,
sports
I can keep Wendy's contact information. She has her picture on the Skype here, and she's a very attractive woman.
Where was she calling from?
What?
Subterranean, the lockbox?
She just said something about being outside near your car. Does that
I think she's in
her
car.
I heard a dog barking, though. What does that mean?
Well, by the way, also, too.
I'm here with my Pomeranian, yeah. And we both have a show, Wendy and Pommy.
Being new to town, you get an agent. Never invite an agent to a show that you are not sure about. They already believe in you, and you show up and you suck. I did that. I was in a show, and it was awful. And I didn't get called out for 5 months.
Really?
She already believed me. It's just like, why give her evidence that, you know, it's like being in a relationship. You have this fantasy. She's so great. She's so great. And then, you know, she's hanging the big cotton granny panties in the bath, and it's all gone.
Mystery. Mystery.
But it's real. The Amish. The Amish are not listening. The sun has gone down. What's going on?
You have real animosity toward the Amish.
I got in a beef one time.
They make incredible brickle. You know.
Yes. Yes. And the the
did
butter.
Did it take that long? You got brickle. Did it take that long?
I do. Chris is from San Francisco.
Yes.
Chris is from San Francisco, and Chris and his brothers did come up with truly one of the funniest lines of the year, which I posted on my Facebook page, which was, there are so many transsexuals in San Francisco that that Victoria's Secret just opened a big and tall.
Yeah. I'd like a pump in size 12, please. That's my brother Michael's joke, yeah. Yeah. You know, and the kids out here come to town, if you're listening in, you know, you got to get that supplemental income, you know, stay on the top. But I always suggest you become a veterinarian, because you can always eat your mistakes. Anyway, you'll never starve. Pete out there, I'm sorry, we're out here. But, you know, this is so good. Folks, but it's going to be a great show. We got a great cast lineup.
Let's give the stats on it, though.
Let's do stats.
Michael, do you have the information for this production at the Elephant Theater?
Elephant Theater in Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard. And by the way, they also not only give you a show, but they give you a reception of wine and appetizers. And this show will sell out. It's, again, only November 16th, 17th, and 21st. 19 actors, 11 scenes. And to get reservations, which are required, you can do that two ways, by going to Ted Mattison. Now, I'm going to spell that for you. TEDMATTISON at me.com. Or simply call area code 323-660-1722.
Great. And, Michael, if you would also do the kickoff for our closing, what has become an inauguration
for
our guests, and if you would explain to them what our next step is as we wind up the show.
By all means, and each of you will have an opportunity to tell us, to relive for our audience and for your father here in the studio, who may not have heard this, maybe he was there, but your most embarrassing moments in the performing arts, whatever that was, if it happened to you or you were involved with the production, as an actor, a director in your case, we're going to start with you.
Okay.
Leslie.
Ooh,
Leslie.
Wow. There's so many to choose.
The eyes are like pinwheels here. Yeah. I just see it's like, which of the any one stand out or?
Well, not including when I once tried to do a one woman show, and that was I was so sad. I was the only one on stage.
Yeah.
That was sad. But we won't go there. What comes to mind first? It was a painful moment. Truly, because I was dancing on stage in, I think it was Evita, at PCPA, back in the maybe late 80s, early 90s.
Pacific Conservatory for the Performing Arts.
That's right. Thank you. Right up
good.
Santa Maria, California here.
Right.
And I was in this wonderful, you know, production number, Evita, dancing. Ooh. And this partner of mine, we were doing a lift. and I heard a grunt, and it was my rib.
Oh my gosh.
My rib broke. Oh, I was crazy. So I finished out the dance and then kind of limped off, but I didn't limp off too gracefully.
How ridiculously painful was that?
It was, I think I was in shock, so I didn't feel it till later. But I do remember the crunch, like the, you know, when you hear the rib.
Oh,
and but the that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was crawling off stage.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You were such a trooper. You finished the dance and then
I managed to. I think it didn't quite register, you know.
Or it's all adrenaline getting you through.
Yeah, I think
right.
It is because you're right. Dancing. And wow. I just remember, oh my God.
And so what do people say now? Break a rib? Or
I know. I'm like,
oh, God, that was right over the plate. I'm sorry.
For me, yeah. No, really. It's like, oh, my God. But it that was crazy.
Yeah.
And you know what's really funny, too? I don't know if it's that funny, but I managed to have a chiropractor create some kind of a support around my torso, you know,
right.
Like a little brace-like thing. And I actually only had 1 week off.
Oh, because you can't do anything for ribs aside from wrapping them.
That's
right.
Right.
Or barbecue sauce.
And
but aside from
that's
that.
That's right. And then I basically continued. We just re-choreographed it, so we took the lift out, and I continued dancing the whole summer.
Oh,
but
my
here,
gosh.
My roommate would say, oh, let's go home after the show and have drinks and watch Leslie flip around on the floor with her Vicodin.
See, now, you do that. You do that before the production. And then
well, you know what?
Like,
that's where I
got didn't know Evita had a water ballet. And you're
I
just
know.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, man. That's
kind of a story of survival, really.
Yeah, but that's wince-inducing.
Christopher Meehan.
All right. I was doing comedy with my two brothers, and one of my brothers was a Teamster, so we did comedy for the Teamsters at their local hall, and the Raiders game was on.
That had to be fun.
Oh, yeah. There's just two widescreen television, and hey, guys, we're going to have some comedy now. But before we have comedy, just let's all bow our heads. Jackie O'Connell, he passed away last night, massive heart attack. He has three kids, so we're going to pass the hat. And we're going to chip in for his kids. Now on with the comedy. You know, we had to come there. No stage, no mics, folding chairs. The Raiders game's on, right? Two. So no one's paying attention. They're Teamsters, so you really can't start to insult them. And we're just stuck there, just going through stuff. But I do want. I know it's only one story.
No, please.
No.
But that showcase that I invited to my agent to that you know was horrible. In the scene, I'm talking to a dead woman who's talking to me in a bed. Right, I've had an affair, and one of the props was a thong. Yeah, I thought it would be funny to have a red thong, and you can always come up with something. But it was a serious piece, so it didn't work. But I remember, and I would leave. I was the first scene.
Where was the red thong?
It was on stage.
Oh, it was on
stage.
But
it ends up in my back pocket at the end of the story, Michael.
All right.
But I would leave the show, because it was only the first scene, and I would go out in Hollywood, go out to dinner, bar. I would meet people, and then I would run up for curtain call at the last second in my street clothes. Like this, you know, so it was horrible. It was a bad thing. But when we struck the set, I picked up all the stuff, and I always wanted to hang on to my wedding ring for the scene, and this thong put in my back pocket.
Oh.
Those pants weren't dirty, so I folded them up and put them on. About a week later, I went on a date. I'm out. I'm wearing those pants. I'm like, this is going pretty good. And I reach in my back pocket, and out I pull a thong.
Oh.
How do you
yeah.
You say, no, it's not what happened. It's a prop and a play. It's a play.
Yeah. Or said it's a prop.
Yeah. Anyway, I said it was a prop, yeah. So,
I've tried it. No, really, it's just a, well, no, you could have said it was yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could have been
shaped
the
living
in
the warm weather.
The big and tall. The big and tall. The Victoria's Secret big and tall.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I like that
full
thong
circle.
With a hammer loop. Anyway. Man, I got to tell you, this show
What's
is...
What's a hammer loop?
What's a hammer? You put a hammer in it. You know, the little thing.
Oh,
hammer loop.
Oh, where like was your head going? Where were your thoughts going
I thought... he's talking about a Victoria's Secret in San Francisco. I thought hammer loop is some sort of strange sexual predilection that I don't know about.
And what about the thong? It used to be,
did she do the hammer loop? Did she do the hammer loop with
it? Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we got to try that compound miter saw. Hey, by the way, speaking of thongs, now they're called flip-flops. I didn't know that. I'm calling these things thongs,
yeah.
thongs.
Right.
I'm putting them on my feet. Oh my God. Oh, I didn't wear deodorant. What the heck is? Can you people smell that? Wendy, Wendy, this is my scent. Know it. Let's get her on the phone. Is she coming on my show?
No, Wendy's not. Wendy is. You know, I tell you, it just shows my proficiency with the computer when someone is talking to me on Skype and I'm saying, turn it down.
Exactly.
Turn your computer down. Everything will be fine with our conversation. Turn it down. All right. So, Michael, you want to tell them who we got coming up next week?
Yes, indeed. We have from the theater and television, from the theater stage, excuse me, and television, Miss Vicki Lewis of the hit NBC television series News Radio, starring the late Phil Hartman. And both Vicki and John Lloyd Young, Tony Award winner as Best Actor in a Musical for his portrayal of Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys on Broadway, will be with us next week, Paul. And they are both going to be participating in Broadway Rocks Anaheim, November 27th at the Heritage Forum in Anaheim, California, in benefit of the Anaheim Performing Arts Center Foundation and their quest to become home to a resident stage and musical theater production company, the Anaheim Ballet and the Orange County Symphony.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a look forward to that. I'm going to give our guests here one more round of applause.
Yes.
So grateful to have you.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, the two productions that our guests are here supporting and encouraging us to see, which they both sound phenomenal, of course, Leslie Ishii directing Crimes of the Heart at the East West Players. And let's just throw that website out there again, Michael. Do you have it
handy?
That's
eastwestplayers.org.
Eastwestplayers.org. And of course, Chris Meehan with Ted's Theater Kitchen, which is on. What's the? Is there an easy online way to do this, or is it better just to call, Chris, for this?
Give a shout.
Probably
a shout.
Just a call. Okay, 323-660-1722. That's 323-660-1722. That's Ted's Theater Kitchen at the Elephant Theater. I had a great time.
And as did I. And thank you, Chris. Thank you,
as
Leslie.
Thank you.
And your lovely father sitting over
here. George.
George, thank you.
You guys,
George, we're gonna mic you for that laugh next time. We're so grateful to have a little energy coming from that corner of the room.
Exactly. Yeah. See you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to...